It's time for Theology Mix. Theology Mix is a ministry designed to bring church life and theological thought to the front of the line, as Jesus Christ should be the priority within all our spheres of influence. At Theology Mix, you'll find an open forum to discuss and debate Christian ideas and biblical interpretations, be refreshed by the many dedicated authors within the site. And coming soon will be the Theology Mixer radio show, where host Scott McCausey will bring the Theology Mix contributors and theologians to debate the issues and share their passions. Until then, enjoy an archive blast from Scott's program, Christian Devotion Speak Up, a show dedicated to testimony and encouragement. Enjoy the show and share the link. This is TheologyMix.com.
And I do welcome you to the show where we discuss a really tough topic in bullying. Did I pronounce that? Bullying. Okay, yeah, I think I got that out. That leads to some really bad scenarios in life. And Beth Sadati is going to join here in just a little bit to share the tragedy that happened in her family, as well as living life after such a tough loss. You know, God still has chores for us to do, and it's important that we learn the lessons through these tough things and can preach the good news from these tough times, as well as the victories that we share in life also. So please stick around with us tonight, and I pray that you will be encouraged by the things that you're going to hear. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. We come back, we'll have her and her testimony. This is Scott McCausey with Christian Devotion. Speak up.
Mercy Roller knows her name is a lie. There's never been any mercy in her young life. Raised by a twisted and abusive father who called himself the pastor, she was abandoned by the church community that should have stood together to protect her from his evil. Her mother, consumed by her own fear and hate, won't stand her ground to save Mercy either. The pastor has robbed Mercy of innocence and love, a husband, and her child. Not a single person seems capable of standing up to the pastor's unrestrained evil, so Mercy takes matters into her own hands. Her heart was hardened to love long before she took on the role of judge, jury, and executioner of the pastor. She just didn't realize the retribution she thought would save her might turn her into the very thing she hated most. Sent away by her angry and grieving mother, Mercy's path is unclear until she meets a young preacher headed to counsel a pregnant couple. Sure that her calling is to protect the family, Mercy is drawn into a different life on the other side of the mountain, where she slowly discovers true righteousness has nothing evil about it, and that there might be room for her own stained and shattered soul to find shelter and even love. Mercy's Reign is a remarkable historical novel set in the 19th century Appalachia that traces the thorny path from bitterness to forgiveness and reveals the victory and strength that comes from simple faith. Published in December of 2014 by Kriegel Publications, Cindy Sproles brings us Mercy's Reign.
And we're back live, and I've got Beth Sadati with me. Beth, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Scott.
Beth, it's great to have you. I know you've got a heart-wrenching story that we're going to get to a little bit later in the show. But before we get there, I always do this. I always start at the beginning of the life of my guest, because so often we can see God bringing a person to whatever they might be doing today, in this case doing some writing and some teaching. So Beth, why don't you share about growing up? Do you grow up in a Christian home? Did you have brothers and sisters? Tell us the dynamic.
I would love to. I grew up in Ohio, in what I would call just a really good family, middle-class family, lived in the suburbs, had one brother who was 2 years younger than me, who I was really close to. My mom was a first-grade teacher. My dad worked for B.F. Goodrich with computers, and I grew up as a tomboy, so I just had a lot of friends who were guys and girls. I just say this because it reminds me a lot of my daughter, Jenna, who we're going to be talking about.
Yeah.
Had a lot of opportunities, piano lessons and being in the band, and did a lot with sports, and we'd go outside and play football with the guys and basketball, and played softball for 8 years and played in the Little League World Series in Michigan. And I had a really good experience in school. I went to the public schools all the way through, and that was a good experience. And so just good growing up. I grew up in the church and did all the, you know, Bible school, Sunday school, all those things. And
yeah.
I feel like I really had a foundation laid in my life in knowing the Word and knowing God. But when I was in eighth grade, after I finished confirmation classes, my mom decided she was no longer going to go to church. She said that she had not grown up in church. My dad had, but she said she had fulfilled her promise to my dad and she was done. And that just really threw me for a loop. I didn't know what to do with that. And so I stopped going too. And that was just a time when I was asking a lot of questions and about my faith and about why did I even believe what I did? You know, was it only because my family did? Things like that. And looking back, I think that was a really good time because not that I would encourage it, but it was good because in 10th grade, that and for me, that's when junior high was 8th and 9th grade. High school started in 10th grade.
Okay.
So in 10th grade, a senior in high school befriended me who was just wonderful. He just modeled Jesus for me, gave me books to read, records to listen to. And then I had a teacher in my high school who was a head football coach, and he had gone through tragedy. He had lost his wife and baby in a car accident, and yet he just talked to me and showed me who Jesus was. And then I went on a retreat with my cousins, and I think through all those three different things, I just, for the first time in my life, I knew what it meant to really have a relationship with the Lord and really know Him. And it's kind of been a journey of growth ever since then, back in the church, but even more than that, just walking with the Lord and just knowing who He is. And I think that also formed my heart for teenagers and high school and how difficult that time of life can be.
Yes.
And yet what a difference knowing the Lord can truly make, not being religious, not, you know, doing the church thing, but just really owning that faith for yourself and knowing and loving the Lord and how He can step in and make such a difference. And so that I think all of those things just formed my heart for teenagers. And that's also, it was in 11th grade, as crazy as it sounds, was when I just knew that I wanted to be a high school teacher too and just go into the public schools and just love teenagers and share with them and walk with them through their life.
Isn't it just so important, Beth, that we, the people that we interact with within our spheres, whether it's in high school or in the church setting and hopefully within our family, what that looks like really melds the person that we are to become later. So often the friends that we make have many different influences on our life, you know, positive and sometimes negative. But as we look back, you know, through the big picture of the lives that we've lived, we can completely see God's hand within all of our lives and making the difference and helping us to make a difference for the kingdom. And like you mentioned, it doesn't always have to be in the church building, quote unquote. And we so often, you know, talk about the building and the place, but the church in reality is we, the people. And it's these relationships that are so important. And like you said, God put people in your life, whether they were teachers or friends, to make a big difference. And that made a huge impact for you. Maybe share about the importance for maybe one of the listeners right now who finding those right relationships, and maybe the prayer should be that to allow God to bring those people into their life. What do you think?
I totally agree. I'm all about relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Even more so now, just that's just being a part of just everyday life with people and just walking with them where they're at, and that's where the kingdom comes in. You know, it's not.
Yeah.
That's where it is, and that's what Jesus did. You know, he just was with people in everyday life, and I completely am for that.
Yes, yes. you know, you shared 11th grade is where you started having this pull towards wanting to be a teacher yourself. So it wasn't like, you know, Beth, when you were a little girl and you were playing school as a little girl, you weren't like the teacher. It was later in life. What did you want to do when you were a little girl then? You mentioned you were athletic, Beth. Maybe share what you thought you were going to be when you grew up.
I wasn't expecting that question.
I love it.
I don't know. When I was really little, I don't even remember. I know when I was in junior high school, it was sports medicine, and I actually did some sports medicine trainer type things. I thought maybe I'd want to do that. And then in early high school, I thought I wanted to be a doctor. I'm not even sure why. This sounds bad, but I kind of think that I did really well in school. And I kind of thought, well, if you do really well in school, you know, you're supposed to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer. And of those three, doctor was the only one that appealed to me. So that's really what I was thinking until probably about middle of 11th grade. And I just thought, no, I want to be a teacher, and I want to teach English. So that was it.
Okay. Very good. Now, you mentioned, I mean, you just walked right into my next question that I wanted to pose. Were you one of those quote-unquote high school brainiacs? You said you were smart. Sometimes being that brainiac can lend itself to getting picked on a little bit, too. Were you in that kind of crowd, so to speak, being that person that was really smart and some people kind of poked at you?
I don't remember ever getting made fun of for that.
Okay.
I mean, I was in the band, you know, and I graduated as one of the valedictorians, but I think I learn really well. I don't think I'm really super smart. I memorize very well. And
you were valedictorian. Come on.
Yeah. And I knew how to study and.
Okay. Okay.
But I don't think people even saw me as being that smart. I remember my computer teacher pulled me aside. I had to meet with the counselors for about my valedictorian speech, and he pulled me aside and he said, "You're the valedictorian," and he just laughed. And it was not mean. It was just like he had no idea. So
Okay.
I don't think I wasn't picked on for that.
All right, very good. So you head off to college. What was the experience like? You knew what you wanted to do, what you wanted to be. Was this a good experience for you?
College was a fabulous experience. It was in Pennsylvania, Grove City College, and it was fantastic. I ran for the track team there and was involved in outreach ministry to boys at a detention center, and I was involved in a lot of activities and lived on campus and absolutely loved it. Great experience.
Very, very good. And when you were in college, did you meet your husband at this time, or when did he come into the picture? How did God bring him in?
I did not meet my husband there. I did not, no. I met him, I was at college for 4 years.
Okay.
Actually dated someone for 4 years, but that did not work out.
Okay.
And then I started teaching high school. So I was single and taught high school for 4 years. And it was during that time that my high school asked if I would start a journalism program and newspaper, which they'd never had before. And so I was in Ohio teaching at a public high school, had to go to Northwestern University in Illinois to take a graduate journalism class. And it was there that I met my husband, and he was from Southern California, and he happened to be there taking a Latin class, and we met and had a 3-year long-distance relationship, writing letters, and then years later we're married. So, yeah.
Very, very cool. Very cool. And you've taught, Beth, in a number of different venues. You've taught in the public arena, the private arena. You've done the homeschool thing. Tell us of these adventures, maybe even the advantages/disadvantage, in your opinion, of each of these different methodologies.
I've had great experiences in all three.
Okay.
In all three places. I see pros and cons of all of them. My first 4 years were in the public school when I was single, and that was a fabulous experience. Part of the reason why is because I could be so involved in the students' lives. I still have relationships with those students, you know, 25 years later. and just as a track, I was a track coach and a Young Life leader and newspaper advisor and an English teacher. And so I just feel like I grew up with those kids because I wasn't that much older. I was only 6-7 years older. One thing that I liked about it, one benefit, I just like seeing English taught in a classroom. I think that there's an energy when you're discussing literature and you're working on writing that's hard to replicate at home one-on-one. So I like that. As a Young Life leader, I think the kids there, and the kids, teenagers there, who were Christians really had to stand up for Christ. You know, they had to stand and they had to be strong and they had to encourage one another. And so even though it's not a Christian environment, I saw some amazing kids who love the Lord there and just were strengthened in their faith. So those are some things I see as advantages. After I got married, I moved to Chicago and was not able to teach in the public school system because it takes 2 years for Chicago to transfer certificates over between states.
Wow.
So I taught in a private Catholic high school, and that also was a very good experience. One advantage is, unfortunately, because it was an upper class private school and it was expensive, you're not gonna get the lower third of the kids there because the parents just don't want to pay for it if their kids aren't going to take it seriously.
Right.
So you just have a really good crop of kids to work with academically. So that was also a good experience. And then after my first child, my daughter Jenna was born, I came home and started teaching in the homeschool community, and I love that too. I like it. I like it all. Obviously, I like it because I can teach writing classes the way I want to teach them. They make them intensive, and I make them hard, and I can really push the kids. In the public school and private school, when you're an English teacher, 80% of your time goes to teaching literature, and you can only give about 15% to writing. And you have 100, it's not the teacher's fault, but the teacher has 140, 150 students. So you can't hold the students accountable for all the skills they can learn in writing. With homeschooling, if I have 50 students, it's still a whole lot of work on my end, a whole lot of time, but I can hold them accountable for so much more, which makes them better writers.
That makes sense.
So that's what I like. And obviously you can, you know, you have a freedom to talk about a lot more than just writing. You know, you can work a lot more into it. So, yeah.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, you mentioned your daughter, Jenna, and I know based on conversations that you and I have had that she was very intelligent. You shared with me that her scholastic abilities had her well beyond a level in which maybe your quote-unquote age group would be. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Jenna and just where she was in regards to her schooling?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. She was bright. Like the question you asked me, I think I was normal. I just knew how to study well and memorize for tests. And she was different. She was, and I don't take any credit for that at all. She was just bright. She's my kid who, when we started homeschooling, I mean, this is just an example. We used the Hooked on Phonics program, honestly, because we got it in the mail for free on accident. Right. So it was supposed to be a 3-year program, kindergarten, first, and second grade, and she went through the whole thing in 3 months.
Wow.
And was just reading. And again, it wasn't anything I did. And from that point on, it sounds crazy, but she loved to read, and we couldn't give her enough books. And she just read and read and read. And it wasn't, she loved her fiction, you know, she loved all those, you know, all the fiction books that are popular. But it was beyond that. She loved anything about history, about science, about medicine. And she was just constantly reading. And so I think that's why when she scored sky high on her test, and I never taught toward the test. I never gave her practice tests. Actually, we had never done any quizzes or tests in homeschool. I homeschooled her through sixth grade with the exception of fifth grade when she wanted to try public school.
Sure.
And I'd never done that. So she had no preparation, and yet she was in the 99th percentile, and it's just because she read so much, honestly. And then in seventh grade, she took the SAT as a seventh grader, and again, zero preparation for it. And in English, she scored in the 83rd percentile. So that it was just, that's it.
So she went on to some different schools, obviously, and you guys wanted to get her into an area where she would be challenged. Is that correct?
That is. So in fifth grade, she wanted to try public school. She liked homeschooling, but wanted to see what she was missing, honestly. And we didn't want her to ever feel like we were holding her back and she was missing something. So she went to the local public school. She enjoyed it. It was a great experience. You know how you always worry about the social thing, you know, our homeschoolers
yes.
benefit in socially. And that was, you know, that was just not an issue for her. Within a week, she was fine. It was a good experience, but she was just really bored. She would finish her work early. She said it was all review. And so she asked if she could do homeschooling for sixth grade, but she did go to the middle school band program and, you know, was in all kinds of activities. But then once she, because she'd gone to public school, the school system had seen her scores and they said, oh, there's a school for the gifted and talented in Greenville. And she qualified for it. And they, it's for 70 kids in each grade from all over the county. There's three of these schools in the United States. And we went and looked at it and we left the choice up to her. We said, what do you want to do? And she said, oh, I want to go. And so that's where she went for seventh and eighth grade.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And it was at this school where some things started to happen to her in her life. She started experiencing some things, I think, that weren't the best experiences. You know, things that those who get picked on for different things or bullied for different things can relate to. Maybe we have some listeners out there that could definitely relate to that. Why don't you share the continuation of that story and what happened next in her life?
I'll do that. I would say for the most part, she had a very good experience at that school. So I don't want to say, I'm not tearing down the school at all.
Right.
The education looked very similar to what we did in homeschool. The way they taught, it was not a Christian atmosphere, a Christian environment. So we were always supplementing that at home. But other than that, it was good. But what happened is a teacher after a couple years later, one of her teachers said that this particular class she was in, that was in seventh grade, was just unusually cliquish. And I understand that as a teacher, that some classes are more cliquish than others. And so this school for the gifted, it was from third grade up through eighth grade. And this teacher said that ever since third grade, it has just been very cliquish. And in particular, there was a group of boys who, again, came from good homes, you know, decent kids, good homes. But they just kind of, they were in charge. They were the popular boys, and they kind of ran things, and they did some bullying with other kids. And nobody really stood up to them. And it wasn't anything huge. It wasn't any big, terrible things that you would, you know, that you would imagine. It was just all those little constant things, just being mean and intimidating other people and excluding people and making fun of people. And like during band, Jenna would come home and she was a storyteller, so she'd always tell us her stories. And in band, they would take, you know, somebody's music that was on the bandstand and they would just scatter it all over the floor and pretend like it was an accident. And that boy would be left to pick it up by himself, you know. And once in history class, they pulled up a photo of a girl and they pulled it up on the screen on the laptop, which they shouldn't have been doing, and just started laughing and saying how ugly she was. And there was some cheating that went on. There's just a lot of little stories like that, but lots of them. And Jenna has, since the time she was a kid, she's just always had this heart of justice. And she's always been very bold and not afraid to use her words. And she couldn't tolerate that. She didn't know what to do with it. And so she stood up to them. And she used her words and she confronted them and then they turned on her. I think they didn't know what to do with her because people hadn't confronted them before.
Yeah.
And so they turned on her and again, just little small ways, just things they would say. And I don't know. That's really what it was.
You know,
so go ahead.
Getting picked on for whatever reason, for being ugly, for an ability that you might have that somebody else doesn't have, all these different things for being smart. Sometimes, you know, I was in the high school environment. I went to high school. I know what bullying's about because I saw it. And not only that, I experienced some too. In high school, I got moved up to the varsity in football and baseball my sophomore years. And I was looked at as the bad guy for it. The seniors didn't want anything to do with me because I was taking a spot. I was playing in a position that I had no right to. And, you know, in all fairness, I probably didn't have any right to. I to this day in football, I have no idea why the coach brought me up. But because of that, I experienced some bad things that went on. You know, fights in the locker room where I got singled out and had to defend myself for no real reason other than the fact that somebody wanted me to be up with a different group. You talk about the cliques. The cliques happen, you know, in all the schools. Most of the time you've got a motor group, you've got the jock group, you've got the brainiacs, you've got all these different groups, and that's always been the one thing that's bugged the tar out of me about that public arena is all these different cliques and groups that were always going on. And it makes things really hard when it comes to relationships, because here we've got a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old or whatever, a 13-year-old, and they're trying to figure out life and friendships, and they've got somebody picking on them or a group of people picking on them. And it's what we do when these things happen that set in step what's going to happen in a bigger scale. Jenna took it to another level. Share what happened following these kind of events that were taking place once she started defending not only herself but some of these other folks.
She started standing up for other boys, girls and boys. But at the end, on the outside, she was really tough. She always called herself the Ice Princess because she was just strong on the outside. But on the inside, she was very, very tender and very sensitive. And she was very sensitive to cliques and to knowing that she wasn't totally accepted by this one group, particular group of boys.
Yep.
And she wanted to be. She was used to having, she had lots of friends, homeschooling friends, and she was used to having a lot of guy friends. And she couldn't understand why they didn't accept her. And so when she went into eighth grade, she changed her group of friends, which she regretted later. She had a really nice group of girlfriends. She started hanging out with the popular girls so that she would be accepted by the popular boys. And they acted like they accepted her, but then in spring of her eighth grade year, I think they were playing a game with her. And they just totally changed, completely stopped talking to her, cut her off, ignored her. And that was just really hard for her. But then she went on her eighth grade trip. The photos that are on the website, those are from her eighth grade trip. She had a great time there, had a great time at her eighth grade dance. And then on the last day of school, there was one boy who she had a crush on, and that played into the picture too, even though they were just friends, and he would be great friends with her. She thought they were really good friends. He would be nice, talk to her. This is middle school, right? And
yes,
he would be great
exactly.
friends with her. Yeah. When his friends weren't around, but as soon as his friends were around, he would ignore her. But then on the last day of school, he came over and gave her a hug and said he was going to miss her. And yeah, so it was just playing with her emotions, and part of that was her because she was 13 at the time, and part of that was just kids, teens not being kind and sensitive, and you know, just doing the things that some middle schoolers do, you know.
Sure. Yep.
But what happened? The turning point is she went on to high school, and for this school for the gifted and talented, those eighth graders are allowed to choose whatever high school they want to go to in the district. She chose to go to a school in the city. It was 20 minutes away, but there was an international baccalaureate program in it, an IB program for about 60 kids that attracted just really bright students. You know, a mixture of Asian, African-American, Indian, you know,
yes.
Caucasian, everything. And she really wanted to be a part of that program. So she went to high school. She loved high school. She loved it. Her first month and a half, She loved it. She decided that she was going to learn some lessons from middle school, and she was not going to change her group of friends, and she was not going to develop crushes, and she was going to try to keep that at bay, and she never had a boyfriend, you know, but she was going to focus on friendship and focus. She just made really good choices. She was in the marching band. She was taking an AP World History class. She loved her teacher, and he was a believer, and just she had a great experience. But what happened? This is actually the first chapter of the book that I'm writing. It was at the end of September. She was in biology class, and there were 10 students from her gifted and talented middle school who had chosen to go to this IB program.
Okay.
And her biology teacher paired her up with one of her former classmates.
Yep.
And I don't know why she didn't know why, but he never worked on the project they were working on. Instead, he just started talking, and he just started telling her lie after lie after lie. And he told her that this group of popular boys in middle school, they all thought she was incredibly ugly, and they used to sit during lunch in the lunchroom, and they used to just point at her and laugh at her and talk about how ugly she was, and that they all thought she was really stupid, and that they were never really her friends, that during that time in eighth grade when they pretended that they liked her and they pretended they were her friends, they were just messing with her, just playing with her, and she was naive and she missed it, and they were never really her friends. And then he also told her that, and she regretted this later, but one day she came home from school when those boys stopped talking to her, and in a dramatic moment, she wrote a poem about it, and she uploaded it to the internet and entered it into a poetry contest, and regretted it later because she didn't tell me about it till the next day, and then she couldn't get it off the internet. And one of the boys had Googled her name, found the poem, and she never put any names in it, but it was very obvious who she was talking about. And it wasn't mean. It was titled "To You, Whom I Once Called Friend." And one of the boys had printed it out and passed it around on her eighth grade trip, and she never knew about that. And so that happened during biology class. She made it through the rest of the day. She had a 3-hour marching band rehearsal afterwards. She made it through that until the very end of the rehearsal, and then she just broke down in tears and started crying. And the band was amazing. There were 60 of them, and they're all different ethnicities, and they just gathered around her and supported her, and the boys wanted to know who had said these things, and she would not give a name because she didn't want him to get hurt, you know?
Right.
But then when I picked her up at band at 6 o'clock or night or whatever and drove her home, and we just sat in my driveway, and she just cried and cried and cried and told me what had happened, and we talked through it, and I listened, and we prayed, and we talked about how that boy, those were lies, that was not true, you know, and she couldn't believe that. That's not who she was. That was not her identity in Christ, and it wasn't who she was regardless. You know, everybody knew that. And that he just must have been really hurt, and for whatever reason, he decided to hurt her. And then my husband and I took what we thought were the right steps. My husband contacted the counselor at school. Some of the teachers were aware of it. My husband sent out emails saying, never pair up Jenna with this other boy again.
Yeah.
However, and we touched base with her every week. Would I say, Jenna, how are you doing with that? And she always said, I'm fine. I know that he was lying. I know that's not true. That was fine. But 3 months later, we realized it wasn't fine. So that those lies, for whatever reason, had lodged in her heart and caused her to basically replay all of 7th grade and all of 8th grade through those lies, and until she just couldn't stand it anymore and she didn't know what to do.
So was depression setting in, Beth? I mean, you shared she'd come home and just not the same. The interactions sounds like they were a lot different until finally it come to a point where she couldn't deal with it anymore.
Tell us
about that and tell us about that struggle.
This is hard because I'm a high school teacher. I know the signs for suicide. I know what to look for, you know?
Yeah.
I know, you know, that my husband, works in full-time ministry with the homeless. He also deals with suicide, and he knows what to look for. You know, we know when they start, a person starts to give away possessions, and they start to isolate themselves, you know, and they're depressed, and they don't want to participate in activities anymore. They don't want to be with friends. You know, we know the warning signs. Usually there's a cry for help. You know, we know all those signs. And those signs weren't there. There are some things we can look back in retrospect and say, oh, maybe we should have caught that, you know. But those things are very small, and all the typical signs, and honestly, this terrifies me, you know, but those typical signs were completely missing. I would say that depression was a factor, but the only reason why I say that is because Jenna left a 3-page suicide letter, typed suicide letter, which we've been told is a gift that most people don't have that. So they don't know most people don't have any reason why somebody chose to end their life.
Yes.
We have that. And in that letter, she said she was depressed for the last 3 months, but she had hidden it from everybody. And so nobody knew. Mm-hmm. And I was the one who she shared everything with. Like when I read her journals and I read all the writings she left behind, I knew all those stories. I knew it because she was an open book. I wasn't that way growing up with my parents, but she was.
Right. Right, exactly.
And I was always shocked by how open she was and how much she told me and how much she shared with me. And she had other really good friends that she shared with, and she didn't share this with anybody. She just kept it all inside. But she said she was really depressed for the last 3 months. And she said in her letter, she said, I realized that ever since seventh grade, she said, I realized that I was a loser, that I was stupid, that I was ugly, and that I didn't really have many friends. And those were the exact lies that were spoken to her by the boy in biology class. You know. And it changed her thinking. But on the outside, she was still interacting with friends. She was interacting with the family. She was laughing. She was a part of marching band. She was in youth group. She was training for track. On the outside,
yep.
Everything was still normal. But on the inside, it was just that pain of being 14 years old, you know, being a teenager, and how 3 months of feeling depressed can feel like forever.
Yeah.
Until she made the choice.
Yeah. You know, and it is true. Those people who are struggling with an incident of being bullied, it puts so much stress on that person that they internalize everything. They don't want to share. If they share with a friend, the friend might say something, and the next thing you know, it's exploded to another level. They don't want to tell mom and dad because then mom and dad might say something to the school or talk to a parent that is the parent of one of the kids has given their kid a hard time. I know this because, again, sophomore year and going out to a baseball practice and having one of the biggest kids on the team come up and put me in a headlock behind the dugout. And it's you don't want to share. You don't want to tell anybody. You just internalize it. And it's very, very difficult. Leading up to what happened with Jenna, did you discuss with her giving her troubles to Christ and what that might look like, you know, to her?
We did. And she... there are some questions I'm just not going to have answers for because I don't understand them.
Sure.
I mean, she knew Jesus. She loved him. She wrote about that in her suicide letter, you know, that she loved him, that she was praying. She was reading the word. She was involved in youth group. I loved watching her during worship. She used to worship beside me, and she was just passionate in the way she would worship the Lord, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So all of that was in place. She said in her letter she'd been crying out to the Lord for help. I know he didn't fail her. I know he didn't fail her. But she just got so confused until she made the wrong choice, you know?
Yeah, yeah. How has your belief in Christ played a part through this tragedy, Beth, you and your family? I mean, I can't even imagine, battling through this, you know, how has Christ, how has maybe even the church come alongside family, friends, help lift you up? I'm sure that you still have days where it's seems impossible to get through. Why don't you share a bit about that? Because we might have a listener out there that has went through something where they've lost a loved one like this and don't know how to go on. But as I led up from the beginning, we're all given gifts. God wants us to move on. And even right now, you may have the opportunity to share with somebody who's struggling in a specific spot of how you move on, how do you get to the next step. Maybe share how that looked for you.
Maybe I should back up just a little bit, if that's okay.
Absolutely.
Jenna ended her life. It was her first day back to school after Christmas break. So it was on January 2nd of 2013. She'd gone back to school that day. We thought she'd had a really good day at school. I picked her up. She was happy on the way home. She'd been with a friend on New Year's Eve. She'd been with a friend the night before talking, just having a really good time. So we suspected nothing. She came home from school that day. She was laughing on the way home in the car. She said she always attracted drama, and she didn't know why. When she'd gone back to school, there had been a boy who'd asked her to the ball, but he had a girlfriend, and she had told him she couldn't go to the ball with him, the IB ball, because he had a girlfriend, even though she was flattered that he liked her, you know, that she wasn't going to do that. But she thought it was confidential between her and this boy, but she got back to school, and everybody knew about it, of course. And she was really not happy that everybody knew about it. But she was laughing about it. She said, "I just attract drama." But she came home and asked if she could go to her special place down at the end of our cul-de-sac, where she just liked to go just to have some space before she started her homework. And then she said she was going to come home, finish her IB homework, and then go to youth group. And she never came back. And so that night for us was traumatic. We thought she had been abducted. We never imagined that she would have ended her own life. I mean, that wasn't even on our radar or anybody else's. The police came, there was a search, friends ended up coming for about 2 hours. And then we were delivered the news, that she had taken her own life. But from that moment, we were surrounded by friends. I mean, that night was a nightmare, you know, absolute nightmare. But we were surrounded by friends. From that night, it's hard to describe, and I know I'm running out of time too. But when that news was given to us, we were in the family room of my house, and my husband and I were sitting out. Somebody came into the room. I didn't even see a lot of this. Everything is kind of a blur. So somebody said, "You need to sit down." So my husband and I sat down on the couch. And then he said, it was one of our friends, said, "Your daughter is dead. It appears she's taken her own life." And I'm usually very calm and laid back, and you can't plan for a moment like that, you know?
Right.
And for probably about the next 20 minutes, I just know I was sitting on that couch, and I was just, and there were people all around me, but I didn't see them. And I was just calling out, "No, no, no," over and over again. And that's what was happening. This is hard to explain, but that's what was happening in the natural. But in the spiritual, and I hope this doesn't sound weird. So I was sitting on the couch. My husband was with me. He was trying to comfort me. I was calling out, "No, no, no," but I was face down in front of the couch, and I was face down in front of the throne of God, and just saying to him, like, not even, I believe it was the Holy Spirit, just crying out, you know, as it says in Scripture, where words and where words can't express, he cries out for us. And it wasn't anything I could consciously try to say in that moment, but just saying that this was not from God, that this was from, we have an enemy, you know, Satan, and then he comes to kill and to steal and to destroy. And that our God comes to give life and to give it abundantly. And that I didn't understand this, but that this was not from him. You know, this was a choice Jenna made in a moment of pain, but that this wasn't from him. But just crying out from the depths of my heart that like before his throne, that one day I would see with my eyes and hear with my ears the good that he would bring from it, you know, even though his will for Jenna was that she would have life and have it abundantly. And it was like from that moment, he was just with me. He was so present and so real, even though the pain was equally real, you know, and the pain still continues today. It's still there.
Yeah.
And yet his presence is so real and he's so close and he's here and he steps into the grief and he tells me again and again and again that he loves me too, that he's got Jenna, that she's with him and she is healed and she's whole. And one day I will be with her forever, you know, but that he's here with us right now, stepping into that pain. And he does it in so many ways, Scott. I can't even begin to describe. I mean, it's his presence. Like I don't cry much in public, but it's still probably at least every other day I go into my bathroom and I close my door and lock it because it's the only place I really have privacy. And I'll just be face down before him, just raw and broken and just pouring out my heart to him. And he just loves me and he meets me there. And so it's first and foremost just his presence. And I couldn't do without it. It's just where he steps into that place to the cry of the broken and he meets them, you know. But then friends, I mean, that's the main way, but there are 100 other ways. It's through friends. Our friends have been so faithful and so good to us. And normally in a situation like this, you just lose a lot of friends because they don't know what to say and they don't know what to do.
Sure.
But my friends have just surrounded us, old friends and new friends, who just say, we want to walk with you. And they even say, we don't always know what to say to you, you know. And we don't know. It's awkward for them. But they step in and they've just been there for us in so many ways.
Yes.
Counseling, my husband and I went to counseling every week for the first 6 months, and Miracle Home Ministries that my husband works for paid for that. My kids went to counseling every other week for a year, and that was helpful. I started running again a month after losing Jenna, and I had a couple of friends who joined me in that. Otherwise, I don't think I would have stuck with it.
sure.
Just honestly, you know. And that was painful, too, because a week before Jenna's death, Jenna had run with me, you know, so I had that memory to work through. But a couple of friends joined me in that, and that has helped. What else? My teenage students have been amazing. They were just at my house yesterday for a game day, just like Jenna used to have game days all summer long before her high school year, and just fill up the house with like 20, 25, 30 students of her peers. And so that was at the end of eighth grade. And now those students are going to be seniors in high school, and they still come and fill my house with game days. They come every Thursday and I teach them. And it's just like they play the piano and they just aren't afraid and they just stand beside me. And it's beautiful. It's painful because Jenna should be here with them and she's not, and I just miss her like crazy. But it's just beautiful how the Lord provides, and I don't know, just shows me that he's here in so many different ways.
Amen. So. Well, and we are streaming over.
I can talk a lot more, but yeah,
well,
I'm sorry.
And I'm don't have to apologize. I'm completely good with streaming over. I actually scheduled a little more time because I figured we'd have a lot of tough things to talk about. And one of them that I have to bring up, because we may have, again, as I mentioned, we may have some listeners out there that have some struggles. Maybe they're seeing a pattern with their own child pulling back and into their own personal cocoon, and they're not opening up anymore. Knowing what you know today, Beth, what do you share with families in regards to interaction with their kids? I mean, you just shared you were very active with Jenna. What else is there that can be done? Knowing that there's bullying going on, having tough conversations to put an end to it, you were involved in that too. But what would you try to impart to a listener struggling to have a preventative measure in this regards for their own family?
That's a hard question because,
yes.
Again, that's just for the reasons you said. One thing I would say now, just from what we've been through, is just to realize that the signs aren't always there. And I know now what I didn't know then, that a lot of times your bright, gifted students, the ones who seem really confident, that's no guarantee of anything. A lot of times they struggle a lot because they do feel things very deeply, and their perception of things is really deep, and so they carry a lot more burden inside than a lot of people do. And so I would say don't assume anything. I would say talk about suicide with your students. We never talked about it with Jenna because we never thought it was anything that needed to be talked about, and it's just kind of awkward, you know?
Yes.
And I would say talk about it. Start the conversation. Open up the conversation and just get it out on the table, even if you don't think it's there. Another thing is I am a huge advocate for counseling. Jenna had asked us, and this is one of those small things, again, that I alluded to that I think we might have missed, that I regret, is about probably about a month and a half, 2 months before she ended her life, she asked if she could see a counselor, and she said it was because of her fear of spiders. And that's crazy because she was always so honest with us. But
yeah.
And my husband is a certified counselor, actually, has a certificate in counseling.
Yeah.
And so he was all for that. And he's like, yeah, let's take her. And I was like, but it's just about spiders. We don't need to. But, you know, and we intended to. We just didn't get around to it as fast as I wish we would have now. But I wonder if it was that wasn't the real reason. And she just, because
right.
of shame or whatever, she didn't tell the real reason. And the
yeah.
other thing I would say is my students have always been, the teenagers have always been very open to me. They're just with me. I'm a teacher that they just talk to for whatever reason. But since losing Jenna, they have just been so open and transparent with me. And I would just say a lot of them are really hurting. And it's a lot of your good kids from good families. And again, this is scary, but that you would never guess. But a lot of them are really hurting because it is hard to be a teenager, and there's so much pressure on them these days, so much pressure, you know? And just remember that. Remember what it's like as a parent to be a teenager. It is just hard, and try to start the conversation.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's very, very important. I also know, and we haven't even touched this. I'm just a pathetic host. Beth, we haven't even touched the fact that you're writing this book, and you're putting this story together. Has writing been therapeutic for you during this process?
It's both. It is therapeutic. It helps me process what happened. I process things through words, so it helps me process what happened. Jenna left a stack of writings. When she would come home, she would tell us her stories, and then she would turn it into a story. She would write out a story. She was an amazing writer, and her words just flew out. I would watch her write, and they would just fly out of her fingertips, and she loved writing. And so I have a bunch of stories which are actually based on true events. And so I'm weaving a lot of her stories. Her stories are the foundation of the book I'm writing. They tell the story. And so that's beautiful because it's almost like I hear her voice again, and it's almost like I'm writing with her. And by sharing her story, this is my gift of love to her, and it's us writing together. And she always wanted to be an author. So on one hand, it's beautiful, and it is healing. And on the other hand, it's really painful. It really hurts because I have to go back to that place again, you know? And it's my reality, but it still seems like impossible that this can be true, that this ever could have happened. And it's just not the way I want it to be. I don't want to be writing about her. I want her here with me, you know?
Yeah.
So it's both.
Yeah. Well, and it's hopefully just having you here on Speak Up tonight is been encouraging and therapeutic to a listener out there. You know, if it helps one person open that really tough dialogue, I mean, it's a victory that something can be prevented. You know, we learn from these things that happen in our lives, as I mentioned again, from the trials and the victories that we count all joy. And it's through those memories and those times that we've lived that we can move on to the next step, the next hurdle. The Bible tells us that we're ready for the next hurdle based on what we just went through. But it's hard. It's not easy. And something like this, I can't even imagine. I can't even fathom it. But Beth, it's been really good having you on to share that. Now, before I let you go, love for you to share with our listeners what's next. I know you've written a whole nother book that you just took a really cool award at the Blue Ridge Mountain Christian Writers Conference. Why don't you share what's next? Share with us about your accomplishment and moving forward.
I'm just walking through this one step at a time, just trying to share the story that I've been given to carry. So the main thing I'm working on right now is I'm working on telling Jenna's story. It's a young adult. I have to call it a fiction novel because there are some details I just don't have that only Jenna has, so I cannot make it 100% nonfiction, but it's based on her true story. It's probably 80% true. The storyline is true. The characters are true with name changes, you know. So that's the main thing I'm working on right now. And that received the Believer's Trust Award, deemed to hold the greatest potential to impact the mainstream audience. So that's really what I'm focusing on right now with the blog to go along with it, which tells the stories that have come, really just stories of learning how to love and be loved and walk through grief and walk through pain and not believe lies, you know, that have come since losing Jenna. Those stories are on my blog. And then the other story that I carry that received second place in the nonfiction category at the conference is a story that I've been working on for about a year, but it got temporarily put on hold, and I'm ghostwriting a story for a couple that's been persecuted and imprisoned overseas for sharing the gospel. And so I'm trying to tell their story. That's ghostwriting. I guess I'm doing all ghostwriting because I'm trying to tell Jenna's story. I'm trying to tell their story. Trying to step into other people's lives and share the stories that the Lord has given me to carry the best I can.
Amen.
And praying that it brings life and truth to others who might read it.
And Beth, what is your website so listeners can check that out? Because you've got your life on there. You've got Jenna's life on there. Why don't you share with our listeners where they can get a little more information about you and things that are going on in your life?
It's just my name, so it's www.bethsadati, and the trick is figuring out which letters to double and which not to double. So it's Beth, B-E-T-H, and then Sadati is SAADATI.com, and that will take you right to my blog.
It took me, I don't know, 4 or 5 times before I finally got it right. 2 A's at the beginning, then I was good to go. But, Well, Beth, I'm glad you could join me tonight on Christian Devotion Speak Up and with our listeners because you've given them a lot of action that they might be able to take in their life. And I know it's tough for you to share that, but it's also very important as well. Thank you for being with us tonight on Speak Up.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Scott, for the opportunity.
This show was brought to you today by Scott McCausey and TheologyMix.com in conjunction with Christian Devotion Speak Up. The thoughts expressed today may not be that of the ministry, but are meant to encourage, uplift, and make you, the listener, think about Christ-centered life and ministry. In Matthew 5:13-17, Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has lost its taste, how shall its saltiness be restored? It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled under by people's feet. You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand and give it light to all the house. In the same way, let your life shine before others, so that they may see your good works and give glory to the Father who is in heaven." We pray you'll be the salt and the light by sharing the link, which not only helps grow this ministry, but the kingdom of God. Until next time, this is Scott McCausey sharing, God bless your week.